time for our regular segment, Legally Speaking, joined by barrister and solicitor with Mulligan Defense Lawyers. Good morning, Michael Mulligan. How are we doing?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. Always good to be here.
Some interesting items on the docket for this week. It's that word that we've discussed in the past, a bencher, and what the BC government's proposal to modernize the regulation of the legal profession might impact regarding the abilities that role carries with it.
That's right. And I must say, sometimes you need to be a bit worried when the government rationale for doing something is, quote, modernization. Not always, but this may be one of them. And so the background of this is that there are a number of professions that are regulated. They would include things like doctors, engineers, architects, nurses, and indeed lawyers. And the reason for that regulation should be obvious when you think about it. It's to ensure the public is safe, right? You don't want anyone who feels like it purporting to be a doctor or an engineer or something. People would be dying and bridges would be falling down, right? And so if you wish to be any of those things, you would need to meet various requirements, like educational requirements, testing requirements, that sort of thing, so that you don't have incompetent doctors, engineers, nurses, teachers, or various other things. And in many cases, that is really the concern, to ensure competence, to protect the public, right? You want to make sure when you go to a doctor, the doctor knows what they're doing, right? Or the engineer that signs off on the bridge knows what they're doing. Lawyers are a bit of a special case because there is both that requirement or that desire to make sure the public is protected, right? You don't want somebody being a lawyer who is dishonest, for example, and is going to steal your money. And you don't want somebody who's purporting to be a lawyer who's incompetent and giving you bad advice. Obviously, those would be problems, right?
Yes.
And so that's yet another reason why, you know, lawyers and other professionals need to be regulated to make sure there's competence. But lawyers have a special requirement in that lawyers are in frequently in opposition to things the government might want to be doing, right? For example, if the government is looking to prosecute you for something and send you to jail, right, or is suing you or trying to take your children away or doing a host of things, right, the lawyer that you hire may be working in opposition to what the government wants to do to you, right? And so for that reason, you want to make sure that lawyers are independent of government, right, and not just somebody who's sort of beholden to the government in any kind of a direct way, so that you know the lawyer is not going to be concerned that they're going to be disciplined or fired or something bad is going to happen to them when they're working for you, right?
Yeah.
And so lawyers are, in addition to making sure that lawyers are competent, they need to be separate and independent of government. And so lawyers are a self-governing profession, and one of the ways that's maintained is that the organization responsible for regulating lawyers, so the Law Society, is set up to be separate from government. And so the board of directors, would be the people on it are called benchers. It's a bit of an old term, but basically it's the board of directors for the Law Society. The majority of them are elected by other members of the profession. 25 of them are elected in that way. Usually senior lawyers are elected to serve on that role. The government does appoint some members, 6 of them, and the attorney general sits on that board of directors. And so that's how it's worked for a long period of time. And there's a proposal now which has caused, I think, grave concern in the legal profession, which would, quote, modernize that regulatory scheme to allow the government to appoint more of those benchers, board of directors, so the government could exert greater control over how lawyers are regulated. And that's a serious worry if you're concerned about making sure that lawyers are independent of the government. And it's come to a bit of a head in Victoria and elsewhere. And this is, I should say, following on submissions made by the Law Society itself, the Victoria Bar Association, and the Canadian Bar Association, all in opposition to what the government has proposed doing, which would allow the government to exert greater control over the legal profession. What's underway right now is a election to determine who would be the bencher or board of, member of the board of directors for Victoria. And one of the people who's been doing that now for the last couple of years is Crown Counsel in Victoria. And the norm is that somebody who's serving in that role, and it's a volunteer position, would do so for typically a term of about 8 years or so. They get elected every couple of years, but typically the person would just continue to do it as a volunteer. The lawyer who's been doing it, Paul Pearson, indicated that he doesn't feel that he's able to continue in that role because he is also working for the government as Crown Counsel. And he's indicated it's so pivotal and important that the person in that role be able to oppose what the government has indicated it's wanting to do, that he's not going to run again, so that somebody can take over that job to be able to, in a full-throated way, oppose what the provincial government is wanting to do. And he sent out a message to the profession exactly to that effect, talking about how, in his view, what's proposed here would amount to a seismic shift in the relationship between the Law Society, that's supposed to be independent, and the government. And his concern was that, given the fact that he is employed by the government, he would not be able to, in a completely unfettered way, serve to oppose what the government is trying to do. And so what's going on now is an election to determine who could take over that job and oppose what the government is wanting to do here. And I should say, you might wonder, sir, why would the government want to do this? Why would they want to take control? And there are a couple of reasons for that. One of them may be a general desire to have some greater control over an entity that can act in opposition to the government. And we've seen a trend in that regard over the past few years, including with things like ICBC, right? We've seen them move to this no-fault scheme where there's, it can be harder to challenge decisions being made by them. And so there may be a generalized interest in maintaining greater control over an organization that can act in an independent way in opposition to government desires. Another stated reason is a government, there's been for years, and we've talked about this, a serious underfunding of legal aid in British Columbia. We are the only province where there's a special tax that lawyers have to charge their clients who are hiring them. That tax was supposed to go to pay for legal aid. It was set up by the NDP when they were in government last time. And the government now diverts more than half of the money it collects to other purposes, doesn't give it to the organization that provides legal aid to help the poor. And part of this proposal would be to set up a scheme of paralegals who would be intended to provide legal assistance to the poor. And the concern about that is whether those people would have the same degree of training that a lawyer would have. And there is a worry in the profession that it's not appropriate to offer a lower quality of service potentially to somebody. And it would be, rather than properly funding legal aid, giving people who had less training, having them provide assistance to people who can't afford to hire a lawyer is not necessarily an appropriate solution to that problem. And what should happen is proper funding and the money shouldn't be diverted that's been collected. So that's one of the things that's underlying this as well. And so it's a serious issue. One of the important things to remember is that the independence of the legal profession, much like the independence of the judiciary, right, is not something which is intended to be a benefit to the judges or to the legal profession. That's not why it exists. It exists in order to serve the public interest, right? You want to have, and you should have, confidence that the judge deciding your case and the lawyer who's helping you are acting independent of government, and they don't need to be concerned that they're going to be disciplined or regulated or something's going to happen to them when they're making a decision or they're helping you. And what's currently proposed would serve to undermine that. And that's why the public should be very concerned about what the government has suggested here. And that's why the lawyer who's been serving in this role in Victoria has indicated he's doesn't feel comfortable continuing in that position because there just needs to be clear opposition to what the government has proposed in line with the opposition that's been expressed by all of the organizations that deal with us. And so that's what's going on, and that's why people should be concerned about the government's proposal to try to take greater control over how the legal profession operates.
Michael Mulligan with Mulligan Defense Lawyers, legally speaking on CFAX 1070. We'll continue right after this. We've recently discussed the phenomenon of 24/7 camping here in Victoria and a pledge by Victoria Council to phase out the practice of relying on encampments in parks for human beings to shelter themselves who have no otherwise reasonably available alternative shelter. But in that sentence itself arises an interesting question. What do those words mean? Is there some sort of test somewhere? How does a court interpret them? Well, the BC legislature, it would appear, is lending a hand. Michael Mulligan with Mulligan Defense Lawyers is legally speaking continues in the latest Miscellaneous Statutes and Amendment Act.
Indeed, I must say it's one of those titles of a piece of legislation you can sometimes not get all the way through without becoming tired. The Miscellaneous Statutes Amendment Act, I think number 4. Now, the background of all of this is a case that actually arose in Victoria. It made its way to the Court of Appeal. It's the case City of Victoria versus Adams. Yes. That's a Court of Appeal decision from 2009. And that decision is the one that dealt with the issue of whether a person's got a constitutional right to put up a tent to shelter themselves in a park. That case begins with what the Court of Appeal describes as, starts this way, it says, this appeal addresses a narrow issue. When homeless people are not prohibited from sleeping in public parks and the number of homeless people exceeds the number of available shelter beds, does a bylaw that prohibits homeless people from erecting any form of temporary overnight shelter, is that unconstitutional? That's the essence of it. So what was described by the Court of Appeal then is that narrow issue, whether somebody could erect a temporary shelter at night if there weren't enough shelter beds, right? And the Court of Appeal agreed with the trial judge that heard that case and said, yes, you do have a constitutional right to do that narrow thing. Now, that sort of formed the structure of what can and can't be done in terms of regulating that. Now, like many things in life, as you said, you know, what do these words mean? And since then, there's been a number of cases where there's been arguments about, well, you know, can there, you know, what is reasonable?
Yeah.
There have to be food provided. What about restrictions? What if there are shelter beds, but they say, you know, you can't do drugs or be drinking in the shelter? Does that count? You know, what if the shelter says you have to be in by 11 o'clock at night? You can't just come in at 2 in the morning. Does that count? Right? This kind of thing.
Yes.
So the way that would play out is that if there was a municipality seeking an injunction to stop people camping in a particular park, you've had various trial judges determining whether there should be an injunction granted to prohibit that or not. And those kinds of arguments have been made. And there have been different decisions about, well, what exactly does that mean, right? And so this part of that Miscellaneous Statutes Amendment Act attempts to define what would be required. And so it says this, it says, for the purpose of enforcing under Section 334 a bylaw against a person who is sheltering in an encampment while homeless, alternative shelter is reasonably available to the person and meets the basic needs of the person for shelter if, and I should pause there for a moment, mm-hmm. Bearing in mind the Court of Appeal, when they originally made that decision, so this is a narrow issue about can you put a covering over you at night, right?
Yeah.
That's expanded to sort of the basic needs of a person, right? So there's been a movement since 2009 and now.
Interesting.
And so this would require the following things. The person may stay overnight at the shelter. B, the person has access to a bathroom and shower at or near the shelter. I guess it can't be a bathtub. C, the person is offered without charge one meal a day at or near the shelter. And D, the shelter is staffed when persons are sheltering at the shelter. And so what would happen if this passes, right, is the government's trying to define what would be the requirement for a bylaw to stop somebody from camping in a park, right?
Yeah.
And so a person would be able to say, well, look, there's a shelter space available, but there's no shower. Well, that wouldn't count, right? Or there's a shelter space available, but no free food.
Yeah.
That wouldn't count.
How near is near? Do we know? Because you mentioned the shower. It's bathroom or shower at or near the shelter, and I'm just wondering.
Correct. The shelter, the shower and the bathroom have to be at or near. The free meal has to be at or near. It's not defined. And so no doubt there would be continued argument about what exactly does this mean.
I see.
This passes. But this seems to be an effort to sort of crystallize what the requirement would be. And it's more than what the original Court of Appeal case seemed to deal with, right? The narrow issue of can you put a covering over you at night if there's no shelter space, right?
Yeah.
And on the other end of that, there have been arguments about, you know, things like, you know, things we mentioned, right? What about shelter spaces available, but it's got some requirement that a person doesn't want to adhere to, right? Like, I can't bring my dog there, or it doesn't allow a couple to go there, or they don't allow drug use there, or you have to be at a certain time, right? Those kinds of things. Those things aren't in this list. Hmm. And so if this passes, the idea might be to do away with some of those arguments about, hey, that space doesn't count because I can't bring my dog, or that space doesn't count because you need to be in at a certain time. The idea would be, I suppose, the municipality would be able to say, well, look, that's not a requirement. There's food, shelter, it's overnight.
Yeah.
There's a shower, you get a free meal, and there's staff there. That's it, right?
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting thing, and one that I think people should know about so we can consider that, right? Because reasonable people can disagree about this policy.
Yeah, yeah.
And given that it's in an act with a title that deals with, I should say, the legislation deals with 187 various things, and there's been, I think, no sort of public debate or attention drawn to this, at least so far. It was just introduced last week. But that's what's going on, and just so people are aware of it and can think about what should be the requirement from a legal perspective before there could be a restriction on somebody being able to set up a tent or some other shelter to sleep in. And that's what the government is proposing. So I think people should think about it, and we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's been a long time since I've read Adams, but I remember the discussion between positive and negative rights. Like, negative rights impose upon the government a duty of non-interference, whereas positive rights are more about entitlements. Governments should provide. And unless I'm mistaken, there was no actual entitlement to shelter. Government didn't need to provide shelter in that case. It was the non-interference issue. But if we're going to talk about supplying one meal per day near a shelter, it sounds like we are moving closer towards that entitlement and away from the liberty aspect.
Yeah, or, I mean, I suppose the way to look at it is this. This, if passed, doesn't require that meals and showers and shelter spaces and staff be provided. The idea here would be that if those things don't all exist, right?
Yeah.
Overnight shelter, bathroom with shower, free meal, and staffing. What it would mean is that a municipality would not be able to get an injunction to stop people from setting up tents in the park, basically, right? So it's if the basic requirement of Adams, right, is that for a government to be able to stop people from, you know, covering themselves up at night,
yeah,
right? That's how it started.
Yeah.
Right? There has to be some other alternative. The idea was we can't create a circumstance where somebody has no choice and they're forced to, you know, lay outside and be unable to cover themselves up at night, right?
Yeah.
That's where that started, right? Which I think is perhaps understandable, right? You know, if you have a legal regime in place that means effectively a person cannot, you know, cover themselves up at night or to keep warm, that's not permissible, right? That sort of falls below the sort of minimum constitutional requirement. Hmm. And so, you know, even that case, it wasn't one that said, look, the municipality must provide shelter space.
No.
It just stood for the proposition that you can't stop a person from putting a tarp up or a tent if they have no other choice, nowhere else to go. But of course, since then, you would then wind up with all the arguments, as people are inclined to do,
yeah,
right? About, well, you know, is that a good enough shelter space and how far away should that be? And what are the requirements? And does there have to be a staff member there? And what about food? And there's no shower and so forth. And so different judges have interpreted that in a different way.
Hmm.
And I suppose rather than trying to go back to the Court of Appeal and argue about what is the constitutional requirement here, this piece of legislation would attempt to define that. I guess another question would be whether they are able to make that decision, because ultimately it's a constitutional assessment as to whether a person has a right to put up a shelter. But these are the elements that at least the government's proposing be there. For that analysis of whether there is an alternative and whether there can be a bylaw that would restrict somebody from putting up a shelter in a park.
All right. That's all the time we have for today, Michael Mulligan, but fascinating as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Legally Speaking, during the second half of our second hour every Thursday on CFAX 1070.